0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon. You're very welcome to Liveline. Cullum O'Mungain here. You can get us on 51551 for your texts. WhatsApp us 087 184 3709 or email joe@rte.ie. John, you came out of the house on Tuesday night. What did you see in your driveway?
To our horror, both myself and my daughter discovered that two tyres on each of the vehicles were deflated to such an extent that the car couldn't move really. And then discovered that some neighbours also had the same issue. And they had left, whoever these people are, left a piece of paper on the windscreen suggesting that they are a group called Tire Extinguishers, and that people who drive SUVs or anything close to an SUV is not eco-friendly, etc., and their gas guzzlers, etc.
And that's why they had let the air out of your tyres.
Yeah, it's the first occasion that we have come across these people. And I just wanted to highlight it, and I'm hoping that other people who are listening can also come forward, because this needs to be addressed, and addressed very quickly, because it can get out of hand. I did actually Google it, and I see that it's happening all over Europe.
Now, you were obviously on your way out. You saw the car. Was it bright time of the night? Was it immediately obvious to you that your tyres were flat?
It was my daughter who noticed it first, and then a neighbour knocked on the door and said, "Look, what's happened to your tyres?" Because it was happening to us. So it was like 8:30 in the morning. So it's not just the fact that it was just the air that was let out. The inconvenience for everything behind this caused a lot of problems and grief for people if you are going to work and you have to be there.
Where were you off to on Wednesday morning at 8:30 when you were leaving the house? Did you have a junior cert candidate in the house, or were you giving a lift to your daughter?
No, my daughter is living at home. She's working in a good employment job, and I had also an office to go to, so both of us were delayed by over an hour. As you can imagine, trying to sort this thing out, which...
Hiya, John. I think we've lost John there. Well, I'll just read out the note that was left on John's car. It says, "Attention, your gas guzzler kills. We have inflated one or more of your tyres. You'll be angry, but don't take it personally. It's not you. It's your car. We did this because driving around urban areas in your massive vehicle has huge consequences for others. Car companies try to convince us that we need massive cars, but SUVs and 4x4s are a disaster for our climate. SUVs are the second largest cause of the global rise in carbon dioxide emissions over the past decades, more than the entire aviation industry. The world is facing a climate emergency, according to the UN. Millions of people are already dying from climate change-related causes, drought, hurricanes, floods, forced migration, starvation. And so far, the impacts on you have probably been minimal. We need to take emergency action to reduce emissions immediately. We're taking actions onto our own hands because our governments and politicians will not. Even if you don't care about the impacts on people far away from you, there's also consequences for your neighbours. SUVs cause more pollution than smaller cars. SUVs are more likely to kill people than normal cars in collisions. Psychological studies show," and we don't know what study that's referring to, so we won't go into that. But anyway, John, that was the tenor of, I just was reading out the note that was left beside the tyre, and said, "That's why we've taken this action. You will have no difficulty getting around without your gas guzzler, with walking, cycling or public transport." And right, it's signed the Tyre Extinguishers, TireExtinguishers.com. Where was the note left on your car? And what kind of a car is it, as a matter of interest?
By identifying my car, it can identify where I am and where I live.
Okay.
So
all right.
It's a 1.2 engine, that's all I can tell you. And therefore, I know that it's not what they would term a gas guzzler. And my daughter's car is a 1.5. So it's not what they believe to be gas guzzlers, which I know those cars are talking about. But besides all of that, we, particularly our family and our friends, we understand everything to do with climate change and the environment. But this attack, which it is an attack, it's an infringement. It's everything to do. They don't give you choice. They don't wish to give you choice. Nothing. And here's the other thing too. If, for example, there was an emergency that morning and we had to, say, go to a doctor, go to a hospital or whatever, and you come out and those tires are deflated because of these nutbags, it's outrageous that they can do this. And also, it's an invasion. They are not allowed into the driveway of anybody's house. I'm not too sure what happens on the main public way. But this has to be stopped and this has to be addressed very, very soon, or it can get out of hand.
And for the record, I mean, do you have a cycling option? Is there a public transport option that you could use? And are you within walking distance of where you need to be going?
But I don't know if that's exactly what they're on about. Yeah, the answer to all of that is yes. I cycle myself. Sometimes it's important to be there in the car for various reasons for travelling. But I do use the bike. I do use the bus. So there's no issue there. And I don't see why anyone should have to defend their right or their choice in this particular situation. Nobody has the right to enter somebody's household area. And nobody has the right to decide whether I drive a car or go on a bike or go on a bus. That's my view.
But that's the principle of it. But in the practicalities of it, you say your car, and I appreciate you don't want to go into what kind of a car it is, but in terms of the engine size, it's got a 1.2-litre engine. It may have a big chassis on it, but it has a 1.2-litre engine. And you feel, even if the intention was to target an SUV, this was the wrong car to
pick. Ironically, I have it that somebody in the area did actually see, they haven't got it on video, but they did actually see four men coming out of a Ford Transit van in hoodies, okay? Now, Ford Transit van is exactly what they are against in terms of emissions and diesel. And yet, this is what they're doing.
Although they could have been running it on LPG or something else. We don't know what it was fueled by.
Well, we're into semantics here now, so I don't know. But the point is that's what we're seeing. So we just need to make it an awareness campaign on this. Whether I'm fully behind Mr. Eamon Ryan, whatever he talks about, but no one should really have the right, without any course of action, to do what they're doing.
All right,
nobody.
Well. And obviously, by definition, as an elected politician, the Minister Eamon Ryan is pursuing his climate action goals through electoral politics and legislation and an entirely different way of going
approach.
About things than the tyre extinguishers.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So if we're getting into anarchy in this kind of society in our country, God knows where that can lead.
All right. C. O'Connor, you're on to us from Bonn in Germany. V. Gates.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm all right, yeah. How are you?
Good. I'm not too bad. The form of action that the tyre extinguishers take, just for the record, you're not a member of the tyre extinguishers, but you can see a certain merit in their methods, can you?
It's not so much that I'm saying action that I'm for or against so much as I'm dismissing it, because, for example, the right to decide if I drive a car or not is really missing the broader context of the climate crisis, which is that at some point in the very near future, we do need to be transitioning away from individual-based forms of transport to public transport, to cycling, to walking, to cities that are designed around facilitating those things above facilitating cars, because cars are killing people. I know from what's been reported that the tyre extinguishers do, at least they would say that they focus primarily on SUVs. And I know that the International Energy Agency last year reported that if SUVs had their own country, they would have been in the top 10 emitters. So, yes, okay, obviously, these actions are distressing to the people that they are affecting, that they are inconveniencing people. But that is often what direct action does and has to do in order to raise awareness, in order to get people to understand how big of a problem this is. And frankly, being delayed an hour or so going to work, while it is a problem, of course, for that person, nothing compared to the inconvenience that the climate crisis will cause and is already causing. So... Okay.
John, go on there. Yeah.
Is a medical emergency an inconvenience? for example, if somebody had fallen down the stairs and needed a car to bring that person to hospital, if a child got sick and needed to go to the hospital, is that an inconvenience? This
See?
Is ridiculous. Yeah. This is outrageous.
All right. It's...
What if the world was made of cheese? That didn't happen. You know, like that could happen under
there,
any circumstances.
There are ways and means to do this, but not attacking somebody's house or household or their motor vehicles is not the answer.
It was nonviolent direct action, and I agree that it was distressing for you, and I am sorry that that happened, but we do need to raise awareness about how these cars are.
Well, there must be some other way of doing this.
Yes,
and I would back it. If there was some other
all right, let's see in there. So we'll take it one at a time because see your line is a little bit shaky. So we do want to be here, everybody. We can make our points. We have the time. We have the time to have the discussion. See, you think that you know direct action will cause distress, but in the interests of making the broader point, that's just collateral damage, is it?
No, my point is, but okay. I am here in Bonn. I have been here in Bonn for the biannual UN climate conference, right, where we have been hearing from people from the global south who are already experiencing the impact of the climate crisis. And yes, inconveniences or medical emergencies or the things that you are describing that could theoretically have happened because you didn't have access to your car for that hour are terrible, would have been terrible. But there are people who, because of the emissions of cars like ours, of lifestyles like ours in Ireland, cannot take their children to the hospital because the roads are flooded, because the roads are no longer there. People are dying of heat stroke. People are dying of floods. People are dying of diseases that should be preventable. People don't have access to medical care because of the climate crisis, because of pollution that comes from cars like those. So yes, I know that it is an issue when people are directly impacted by direct action, but unfortunately, people are not listening. And so I understand when climate justice activists have to take direct action to make people aware of this, because before people were doing this, no one was calling me to speak on the radio about the impact of SUVs. They weren't. So there has been an impact there.
Has it ever happened to you? Has anyone ever attacked or anyone approached you or damaged your car? Or do you use a car?
I don't have a car. I don't have a car.
There we go. Okay.
So.
Yeah.
Do you have a bicycle? See?
Actually, no. Because I walk most places or I use public transport. But I am aware that that's not an option for everybody, that it's not always accessible.
True. If your job is 10 kilometers away from your home, you're not expected to walk to work, are you?
No, but I get a bus. Like, okay, where I live now, I'm in a city, I am able to get a bus. Where I'm from, in Ireland, in Cork, that's not it's a rural community and there's not as much public transport. And I think that it's completely justifiable under the current system that people need to use cars because we need to transition the system to make everywhere more accessible to people without having to use polluting transport. However, there is a difference that needs to be noted between an SUV and any car.
And John, I mean, every time people, you know, go on strike, every time transport services are affected by strike, every time a demonstration walks down a road, people talk about the inconvenience of it. When people want to raise political awareness about a situation, or in the cases of workers' representatives, trade unions, public protest or forms of public protest is used as leverage to advance the cause that they're trying to advance.
I fully appreciate that, Colm. I really, really do. And I'm 100% behind it. I think peaceful protests are good. But individuals damaging personal property is not called for. It should not be allowed. I would certainly support exactly everything that lady said from Bonn. However, there are some other practicalities in life in terms of getting on with life. And that means that if you have a car, if you have a bike or use a bus, that's fine. It's a collection of things. But to be attacked, and I don't mean physically attacked, your home is invaded, if you want to use that term. But And it's growing. It's happening in not too far from where we are in Churchtown and Butterfield Avenue.
Which the Gardaí, are investigating a number of incidents there in Churchtown from the early hours of Wednesday, the 14th of June. They say investigations are ongoing there. See, what about the emotional impact of somebody going out to their drive and they look at something that has happened to their property and their sense of security of what's been happening on their property overnight makes them feel violated and unsafe?
Do you want to take that one?
What about the emotional impact of people experiencing the climate crisis, of people who are losing their homes to floods and fires, to people who are going out into their driveways in the morning and seeing them covered in smoke and air that is not breathable because of these cars? I am sorry that there was an emotional impact. I truly am. But how many marches have you been on? How many, placards have you made? How many times have you written to your elected representatives about this? How many times have you taken action to try and raise awareness about these things? But if you have not done that, then you cannot say, well, there are other ways they should have done this. Because I promise you, if they are resorting to direct action in this way, they have tried all of the other ways. No one is doing this for fun. So I am sorry that you were inconvenienced, but we are trying to save the world. These cars are killing people.
And do you mind, see, how did you get from Cork to Bonn?
That's very simple. So I was actually in Glasgow at the time. I left from Glasgow because I was already there, but I had gotten there by boat. And then I took a train from Glasgow to Edinburgh, a train from Edinburgh to London, a train from London to Paris, and then a train from Paris to Remagen, and then a train from Remagen to Bonn. And I traveled to and from the conference from my accommodation by train every day.
Remagen, that's the town on the Rhine with the bridge over at the railway bridge going from the Netherlands into Germany. John, have you written to public representatives and, if this is not the way to protest about climate change, what would you recommend and what have you done yourself?
Well, it may be a case of resident associations getting together, business associations getting together, forming some of their own groups and then approaching the government, particularly Eamon Ryan, to ask them, what is happening here? Because we who are neutral but also want to support all of these issues, need to get answers just as much as the direct action people. I don't have all the answers. I am saying that I'm in agreement with them. But there are practicalities to go back on that in terms of transport. There are certain practicalities that every household has in the country. Let's not get into the individual and say, I don't drive a car because I don't need to, or I use a bike because I'm just down the road to the office. There's many reasons why people have transport. But the real issue is the climate change. So if that could be dealt with, and if Eamon Ryan or somebody like that from the government can come out and address this particular issue and say, is there an alternative? Is there some other method of getting the message across to individuals? I would be happy to support that. But this type of approach is negative. And I can only see it being... It can turn into an absolutely dangerous scenario down the road. If, for example, some person were to come out of his household and catch one of these characters, and then what could ensue there is, I have no idea. It could be physical, it could be mental, it could be anything. Oh. And that's the danger.
But these are complete hypotheticals that you're just chasing. But none of this has happened. And I'm sorry, but
nothing has happened because nobody's been caught. They do it at 4 o'clock in the morning or 5 o'clock in the morning.
Do you not understand that there are that the people who are being impacted by the lives, but there are many more, some of them have been much more severe than being in
All right. Your line is breaking up at the moment. We'll just try and get you. We'll try and get you on a stronger line. But obviously, in fairness to you, it would be better to have you on a better connection. Kevin, you're calling us from Laois. What have you made of the discussion so far?
Well, it's totally unfair for someone trying to go about his day of work to get up in the morning, to come out to a car, and the tires deflated. Because that, whatever those people are trying to do, they're personalising it. To try to do that in England and around the world with just stop oil, they've lost the battle. These people, general public people, are pissed off, excuse my language, but you won't get the message across like that.
You think they're losing the hearts and minds of the middle ground, do you?
Oh, completely. Like, that man's driving a 1.2 car, it would run in the smell of petrol.
It does. That
lady is probably, I don't know what she drives.
She doesn't have a car, she doesn't have a bicycle, she depends on public transport or walking.
Yeah, and that's fine. Because she's in a Glasgow or an Edinburgh or a London, whatever. Try live where you don't have that form, that public transport.
I think most of the time she's based in Cork, but and she says she uses public transport there. But you say anyway, some people are dependent on cars outside of that. And I think she did say herself she had a certain sympathy for people who weren't within public transport areas. Miles, you were listening to C. You think she's got a point.
Hiya, Colm. Yeah, I think C was very articulate. Made some very, very valid points there. I think what you have to put it in context, it's we're missing all the climate change targets. I feel that comes under the realm of peaceful protest, really. Considering that all other protests, it's just failing. We're missing the targets. And I know we say the size of engine 1.2. Overall, SUVs have had a very, very negative impact. I imagine the people taking the action, they don't record the size of each engine. And the size of the engine isn't necessarily the only thing to take into consideration anyway.
They're in the business of handing leaflets out. We don't know what time it happened at. It could have been 4 o'clock in the morning. But, you know, politicians take the risk of going door to door and knocking on the door of people who may be hostile to them. They take that risk. They put leaflets in through their letterboxes, and come election time, they engage with them. And they engage in a debate of ideas on the doorstep, face to face. And if somebody has questions for them about their action or inaction, then they have a conversation with them and they try and persuade them. And if they can't persuade them and they encounter hostility, they walk away and they go on to the next house and they try their hand and they put a tick in the box and say there's no point in going back there. Now, these people went door to door in John's area and they handed out leaflets, but they didn't do it during the day and they didn't ring on his doorbell and they didn't find out that he had a 1.2 litre engine because they didn't ring his doorbell and talk to him.
Yeah, well, first of all, I think, again, the size of the engine isn't the only thing to consider when we consider how much carbon that car is going to use. But I think the issue is so grave.
Electric car use?
Hang on, Kevin. Yeah, go on.
How much carbon? It's a proven fact. Over the lifetime of a vehicle,
an electric car
uses as much.
Well,
we'll have to fact check that particular thing in terms of the particulars of it. But it, be that as it may, and see, you're back with us. I think you're back on a better line. The tire extinguishers say at the bottom of it, they say if you're driving a hybrid or an electric, they're still polluting and dangerous and cause congestion, and they point people towards tireextinguishers.com. So going back to John's point about the size of his engine or otherwise, it's not about the emissions from the engine per se, it's about SUVs almost as a mentality or a vehicle type that they're targeting.
Hi, can you hear me?
I can indeed. Yeah. What's your view on electric or hybrid vehicles? I mean, do you see them as a lesser of two evils?
Me?
Yes, see, yeah.
Yeah, sure. In terms of the transition to electric cars, it's complicated because obviously you have to then switch your electricity source to something that is not fossil fuel based. So, and there is the ethical issues around the mining of lithium in the global south, and they are very extractive. And generally speaking, it is better to just move away from cars wherever that is possible. However, as someone brought up, and I did address previously, I am from a rural community where it is not possible for everyone to exist without cars, and that does need to be accommodated. I also want to raise that I am from a community wherein our ambulance services and hospitals were cut at the same time, and it is almost impossible to get an ambulance. Most people only have one car, So it is not a hypothetical situation to me that you would not be able to bring someone for a medical emergency to the hospital. And yet, when it is rural communities who are racing this, no one responds and no one cares. So it is upsetting to me to hear people in Dublin saying, well, if I don't have my SUV, then what if I had to bring a child to the hospital? You know, that's a false equivalence.
Can I just ask you, see, though, and I don't know whether you were on the line when I was asking Miles about it. I mean, the tire extinguishers went around and they took the trouble to drop leaflets at driveways where they were letting down the tires. They gave a rationale on the leaflet trying to encourage people not to use their SUVs. What would be wrong with knocking on a door and trying to engage people in conversation about their choice of vehicle and maybe trying to educate them about the issue and persuade them face to face rather than maybe alienating them potentially by letting down their tires?
That's a false binary to pit those things against each other, because for every one person who is doing direct action that is radical and frankly dangerous for them and their own safety in that way, there are 100 people who are campaigning, going door to door, speaking to people at events, sending emails, sending leaflets. That is happening. And it only gets brought up, oh, why are people not leafleting, when people are taking direct action. When people are leafleting door to door, it's, why are these environmentalists bothering me? I want them to go away. Because the truth is, people just don't want to be uncomfortable with the truth of the climate crisis.
Is it a false binary?
Because our lifestyle.
If you're a campaigner, you're targeting your message at the general public. If you're taking out ads, if you're making speeches in Parliament, that's at the general public. But if you're going to address your message to the individual, your choices are very limited. You can either have paid for advertising that's guided by an algorithm to people's personal social media, or you can call to their house. And when you call to their house, you have a choice. You can knock on the door and engage with them, or you can take this direct action. And so it's not a false binary. It's a legitimate question, surely.
No, but I'm saying it is a false binary because there are people who are going door to door and are doing those things. So
where? Can you please tell me where? In Dublin. Where
all over people? Ireland.
Why do they hit and run? Why do they do this? Why do they wear hoodies, I'm told? Okay? Why do they do it
in the
middle of the night?
I don't know. I'm not a member of this group.
But then why are these people not identified? Why don't they just come forward and be more public?
Okay,
and then you may guess, people may listen.
I could only answer if I was a member of this group, which I am not.
Well,
I think what's happening is the normal knocking on the door, which of course the Green Party will do, and setting of targets, it's just not working. And when Norman politics doesn't work, then other forms of peaceful action come about, and this is what's happening.
Why would you personalise it?
Kevin has a question. Kevin, go on.
Sorry, imagine if that lady was looking to get on the train to go to Bonn, right? The train time is 11 o'clock. She goes out of her house in the morning, her car is deflated. She misses the train.
I have already said that I walked to the train.
So you don't drive a car?
No, I don't have a car. I don't have a car.
You don't have a car. That's fine. But
no.
Imagine if you did, Connie. Imagine if you did. You walked out and your car deflated.
Yes, that
would
suck.
Feel?
It still wouldn't be as bad as climate change. What are you talking about?
What do you mean it won't be as bad?
There's a child
in the hospital.
Hang on a second.
Okay, we're not going to talk over each other because we have the time to have the discussion. Okay.
I actually don't. I need to respond and then leave. So if you could let me reply and then I can go, because I am still at this conference. Interacting directly with people.
Let Kevin ask the question and then you can give your response.
Yeah.
And then,
if you live in a rural area, which I think you... Sorry. If you live in a rural area, you need a lift. So you walk 10 miles?
Okay, all right. Kevin, C's under time pressure, so we're going to let her reply and then she has to head. Go on, C, yeah.
Sorry, you're asking me a question that I have already answered several times, which is that yes, rural communities are car dependent.
Kevin, don't interrupt her.
Rural communities cannot switch away from cars at this moment in time, which is why we need systemic change that facilitates rural communities to move away from cars. And where it is not possible for them to move away from cars, we need to move away from a fossil fuel-based electricity system so that electric cars can be used without creating the carbon emissions that they currently create. I have said this 4 or 5 times in this conversation.
All right.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Safe travel back to Ireland from Bonn, whatever route you're taking. Donal Kelly, what's your take on the approach of letting down tyres?
Well, I'm just disappointed to see he's left the debate there, because I had a few questions for her. But to be quite frank with you, I mean, it's a nonsense damaging people's property and placing them in peril because you have some, you know, far left ideology approach to dealing with things. Yeah, as you pointed out a number of times, politicians go door to door. They put the policies in front of people, and in a democracy, they vote on that one way or the other. Now, I wouldn't think, to be quite honest with you, that you're ever going to change C's mind on things. She's, to me, one of these typical far-left individuals.
Well, in fairness, we don't know what political affiliation she has.
You don't have to be. You don't have to be a student of political science to understand what side she's coming from. Okay?
No, but hang on a second, Donal. Even within a parliamentary democracy, you know, where business is conducted in Parliament and people go around and they canvass for elections, at some point, people, to make their point, get out on the streets and they block traffic and they have awareness days and they take forms of direct action, be that strapping themselves to railings or halting traffic. For a variety of causes, it's been done throughout history. So, and people are inconvenienced by that. So Parliament is not the only place where political action can be taken.
Look, awareness is one thing, but when you're impacting on people's lives and you're possibly placing them in peril, well, somebody wants to go in any part of Ireland,
Sorry, impacting on people's lives by letting
miles,
down hi, Colin.
Hang on a second. You were disappointed there that Sia departed. So Miles is of a similar mind. Let's hear from Miles, and we can pick up the discussion from there.
In terms of impacting on people's lives by letting people's tyres down, impacting on people's lives. In Ireland, we have a per capita head of about 10 times that of even India or China. So impacting on people's lives, like
of what?
Carbon emissions. So what we're talking about is drugs.
At the end of the day, we're having this discussion because John rang in about the incident that's happened. And now we're looking into the merits and the demerits of this form of action, and maybe people are getting to discuss what's behind it and what's informed it.
It's vandalism. But
hang on a second. For the benefit of listeners, they're not going to get any of your arguments if you keep talking across each other. So just let Miles finish, and Donal, we'll go back to you then. Miles.
So in terms of impact on people's lives, a couple of tyres being left down on an SUV will have infinitesimally less impact than a climate change event in somewhere in Africa, which is going to mean put people off the land, possible malnutrition, possible dying of drought.
All right, so, okay, that's point made. Point made. Donal, you want to reply on that?
Okay, so supposing we arrive to your Miles's place of utopia here, where all SUVs and all cars are gone off the road, and it's only the bare minimum of exactly what Miles wants, exactly what he wants. Okay, what next? What do you go after next, Miles? Are you satisfied then?
I'm satisfied then. Yeah,
and that's just the cars. You won't be going after the national herd next, no? You won't be doing some damage to the farmers' property.
Because I'm not a member of the Green Party, I've no particular ideology. So when it comes to the national herd or whatever, I will consider that in the merits. And I've heard what the farmers have said, that Irish cows are grass-fed, whatever. So I take each separate argument.
Okay, on that rare point of agreement in the programme so far, we're going to take a break.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Colm O'Mungine here, 51551 for your texts. WhatsApp us 087 184 3709 or email us at joe@rte.ie. Now, a listener who couldn't join us but recorded a voice message on that WhatsApp number 087 184 3709 sent us this message in support or at least seeing the point of direct action.
Hi, my name is Lara. I live in the north side of Dublin. I'm just doing the school run, collecting my daughter at the moment on the bike in the rain. And so I hope you can hear me okay. I know you're going to be talking today about car use and SUVs and so on. So I just had a few quick points I wanted to make. I suppose in terms of the action, first of all, that's been in the news about letting down tyres of SUVs. Well, it's got our attention, that's for sure. It's got us talking. I don't think that kind of action is going to win anybody any friends, and it's fairly indiscriminate. So you don't know who you're targeting, you know, as in the person who's in a hurry, the person with the pregnant wife, and some of the stories that we heard, I think, in reaction to what happened. I look around and there are just so many big cars and SUVs around, and I suppose, like, I don't drive myself, okay, and I'm not going on my high horse because I've actually never learned to drive. I'm in my mid-40s and I haven't learned to drive, so it's I feel like an overgrown child sometimes in that regard. So I don't drive because I can't, because I've never had a car. I grew up in the inner city. I've never needed one. I learned to cycle properly in the lockdown, doing Meals on Wheels to my mother. So I'm kind of a recent convert, but God, it's, cycling's amazing. Like, when it, you know, when it's good, it's great. I love whizzing past traffic. I try to be as safe as I can, helmet and cycle lanes and all the rest. And generally I find drivers very courteous. I would just question, I suppose, or encourage people just to think, do they really need the car, or maybe do they really need to make that journey? You know, I think there are people who do need it, and I think probably people will be phoning in from the countryside saying absolutely we do, and no public transport system and so on. There are also many of us, I think, who aren't in that situation, and I just wonder if it's possible for those people to have a rethink about whether they really need it or not. Can they reduce, can they car share? Cars are definitely getting bigger. Maybe that's something we need to be taking up with the manufacturer rather than the customer. Why are they getting so big? And if it's like when you go into a room where everyone's speaking really loudly, you end up speaking really loudly. You know, if all the cars are getting bigger, people feel they need that bigger car to be safe and to keep their children safe. And unfortunately, it's doing the opposite, especially in terms of the environment. Could perhaps companies look at encouraging carpooling? Can there be some way to make this, to incentivize it, you know? Like, why not car share? Why not HR department find out who lives near each other? Maybe some of this is pie in the sky, but we've got to be imaginative, you know? I just think we can't keep blindly driving around. Those days are gone, you know? No one's going to thank us for it, least of all our kids. So, yeah, we've got to do something. We've got to try something. And I do welcome the fact that the debate has started, and I hope that it goes somewhere.
All right, that was Lara. Glad the debate has started. The tyre extinguishers, at least they've got us talking, Peter Cafola.
Yeah, but I think what they're doing is just vigilantism and nothing else. And where does it stop?
Right.
You know, they disagree with something, or they disagree with what some people are doing. So they go out in the dead of night and impose their will on them. Now, I don't have an SUV and I don't like SUVs, but it's not the right way to be doing things. Where does it stop? You go down to the court and get somebody's name because they're a persistent offender, and then go out and kneecap them or something like this? Well, because I mean, the end justifies the means.
Well, nobody was personally injured in the tyres being let down. Nobody was physically assaulted in the tyres being let down. I mean, it would appear that they went out in the dead of night specifically to avoid meeting people in order to avoid a confrontation. So,
no, because they know the reaction they'd get if people saw them doing it. That's why they're doing it in secret. They know it's not approved of. They know that what would happen to them if the owner of the car saw them.
Right. Well, I mean, are you condoning what might potentially happen to them if an owner confronted them and it did turn into a physical altercation?
Well, if I was on a jury and somebody was up for physical assault on one of those guys, I'd say he was innocent. He was provoked. He was asleep in his bed, minding his own business, when he heard a noise outside and somebody's damaging his property.
All right, but they're called the tyre extinguisher, so there are, I mean, you ask where would it end? There's a limit. They say exactly where it would end. They're looking to let down tyres. They're the tyre extinguishers. That's it. That's their MO. Well, that's what they do.
That's what they're saying now. But you see these other nutters in England that are disrupting sporting events with orange paint and so on. And again, they're imposing their will with these ridiculous acts on innocent people.
All right, but disrupting sporting events with orange paint is not physically assaulting someone. I mean, you've said if you sat on a jury, I mean, would you justify physical assault against people with orange paint?
I think if in the spur of the moment, if you turned around and gave one of them a belt, I don't think you should be held accountable, because if they didn't do the thing with the orange paint in the first place...
Well, one thing is an act of protest and may impact, may affect property or may damage property, and the other is an assault upon a person. It's a crime against the person. Like, that's surely disproportionate.
Hold on. One thing is premeditated. The other one is on the spur of the moment because you've been provoked by somebody with their premeditated act.
Well, you're justifying physical violence against protesters. How is that not vigilantism?
I'm not justifying it.
Well, you're saying you'd have some sympathy for it.
I would, yeah.
Well, how is that not vigilantism? Because, I mean, vigilantism is when the heat gets up in a mob in reaction to something and they go out and take the law into their own hands and people get hurt. That's what vigilantism is.
It's the provocateur that the blame lies with. You know, if you beat up a burglar, is it your fault that he's in your house?
All right, when people broke race laws in Mississippi, did it justify hanging them?
When people broke...
Well, in the southern states, when the Jim Crow laws operated, when somebody broke the law, were the mob justified in lynching them?
That's a bit more extreme now than somebody...
I know, but you did ask, where will it all end? I mean, if people take the law into their own hands and justify assaulting people,
you see the way your argument is spiraling? That's exactly what I mean. You start off with a small thing like letting air out of people's tires, and where does it end?
Well, I mean, with respect, Peter...
One action provokes a reaction, and it goes on, and that's how war starts, that's how trouble starts.
But
if they don't start the whole process with their silly act, there's no harm done.
Okay, but wars happen because of escalation. Surely the physical assault on somebody carrying out a protest is an escalation.
Yes, of course it is.
Okay, so why can't the person who sees the person carrying out the protest just restrain themselves from physically assaulting them and call the guards?
What do you say? Excuse me, I forgive you for letting the air out of my tyres. Please don't do it again. Would that be the approach?
Well, I don't know. The last time I checked, we lived in a constitutional democracy where the rule of law applied, and that's what you're supposed to do. You ring the guards.
I've rung the guards twice for far more serious issues than that, I'm still waiting for them. Waiting for them to arrive. So I doubt they're going to come out because the air has been let out of somebody's tyres now.
All right. Okay. All right. We'll take a break. We're back after this.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Cullum O'Mungon here, 51551 for your texts. WhatsApp us on 0871843709 or email us on joe@rte.ie. Miriam Gormley, the weather changed today. Is it a day for beach volleyball, do you think?
I don't think so. Not quite as much as yesterday now.
All right. So beach volleyball needs a beach. When you went down to Sutton Beach to start up a game of beach volleyball, what did you find?
Yeah, well, we found just a lot of rubbish. I mean, I don't think I've ever seen that before. Usually Sutton Burr Beach is beautiful. It's lovely. It's always a really nice beach. But when we turned up on Thursday morning, it was just covered in rubbish. I mean, so much we couldn't even have space to set a net. Like, we had to clear rubbish before we could do that.
Right. And you took a video of it and you walked around and you go from your camera shows the relatively clean part of the beach, but when you sweep it around to the area that's not a million miles away from the bins, there is a great deal of rubbish that clearly is left over from a number of people coming down and drinking on the beach. Maybe for people who haven't seen the video, and I think we might be tweeting the video from the Liveline Twitter account, just tell us what you found on the beach, how much of it, what kind of stuff.
Yeah, so it was a lot of bottles. There were some old socks. There were some towels. There was this cream nitrous oxide stuff. I don't know. I'm not sure what people do with that. I think
it's the same stuff that's given out as a painkiller in hospitals to people in labour.
It's so-called
laughing gas. But the reason it says cream on the can, I think, is it's used as a propellant. Potentially an aerosol propellant. But that's the label on it. But nitrous oxide is otherwise known as laughing gas.
because I was thinking that I was, because I took it when I was in labor, so I was thinking, is that the same stuff? But yes, obviously people are taking that for their own, you know, those, a lot of those around, a lot of glass bottles, wrappers from, you know, sweets, food, crisps, cans from whatever, Coke, 7-Up, all that kind of stuff. It was just stuff everywhere.
Right,
you know?
And for, I mean, any, for anyone who's been around a city street and sees the small bullet-sized discarded nitrous oxide containers, the little silver ones about the size of an adult thumb, the canisters of nitrous oxide that you're talking about that you saw on the beach were considerably larger than that.
Oh, they were huge. They were big, like I'd say like
the size of a small fire
long.
Extinguisher.
Yeah, correct. They were very big. Like if you're tweeting the video, you'll see, like, you know, you're holding it in your hand and it's like, it's a big long thing. And there was loads of them, you know, so I don't know how many you need, but or where you'd even get them. But they were certainly littered all over the beach.
And how long have you been playing beach volleyball, Miriam?
Oh, years, too many years.
And have you always played it on Sutton Beach?
Not always. We play in like Dollymount, Poolbeg, Port Marnock, but yeah, Sutton now as well. Sutton is probably, it was always the nicest beach, actually. You know, it's a beautiful beach out there, Burrow.
And how much has litter caused a problem for you setting up your pitch for is it a pitch?
Never.
Is that what you call it in beach volleyball?
Yeah, of course, yeah. No, never before. You know, we've run events, we've run tours, and we're always very conscious of telling our participants, take rubbish away with you, you know, because obviously you have to get a license from the council and you don't want to lose that goodwill with them if you leave a load of rubbish behind. So we're always very conscious. And in general, you know, beaches in Ireland are usually clean. You know, this is the first time I've seen something like this, you know, on a beach anyway. I mean, maybe after a festival or something, but it was like that. It was like it had been a festival and people just left all their drink bottles, nitrous oxide, whatever they'd been eating, just left the rubbish all there on the beach.
Right. And had you heard any reports from overnight that, you know, there had been a lot of activity on the beach or drinking or loud behaviour or anything else that led you to expect you were going to find some of this?
Yeah, no, well, I suppose there has in the last couple of days. There was a couple of reports there with Sutton Beach, wasn't there, like last week, I think. One of the other, last weekend, maybe, I think it was Sunday, there was some fights on the beach. And I remember playing there another day in an evening. That's usually why we go in the morning, because the mornings are quieter. But like there had been a couple of evenings where there was a lot of people on the beach. So definitely I knew that there was more like traffic, more people going to the beach. So I suppose maybe that always increases the odds of these things happening. But like I had never turned up in a morning and seen it just covered in rubbish like this.
Right. And would you generally, you know, do you have to clear a level area on the beach and clear all the litter off it to set up your beach volleyball nets?
No, never. Never had to do that before. I mean, shells and bits of seaweed and stuff like that, you might have to clear away.
And is it's played in your bare feet, is it?
Yes. So that's a big thing when you see the glass bottles, you know, because you think one of those cracks and it goes onto the beach. And we've had people in the past at tournaments become injured, you know, because maybe they got a cut from something, maybe an old nail or a bit of glass or something. So, I mean, it's particularly dangerous for people who are on barefoot. And most people walking on the beach are barefoot, you know, whether it's kids or us playing or people going down to the sea or whatever. Like, it's not uncommon for people to be barefoot on the beach.
Right. And but in the case of beach volleyball, if you're jumping up to spike a ball, you're going to jump up and then you're going to come down with an amount of force. So if there's glass underneath the sand, you're more likely to be injured rather than somebody maybe walking on a beach.
Correct. And I've seen it. I've seen people be injured in that manner, you know. So, yeah, it's a big issue for us, people leaving glass and stuff like that on the beach.
Right. Anyway, your appeal, if people are on the beach, regardless of whether people approve or otherwise of celebrating on the beach or doing anything, if you're going to do it, bring the wherewithal with you to clear up after yourself. And as you said yourself, I think in the video you recorded, even if there isn't room in the bin, at least leave whatever refuse you have in a bag beside the bin.
Yeah, because a few people had done that, to be fair. And, you know, because we made that point in the video, saying, well, are there enough bins? Maybe that's an issue. But, you know, like some people had put stuff in a bag and left it beside the bin, which seems like the next sensible thing to do. I think, you know, if you can carry stuff to the beach, you can carry the stuff back. It seems a little bit strange to say, oh, we couldn't possibly carry it back. We didn't have the wherewithal to carry it back. But, you know, you had the wherewithal to carry it there. So it's just that little bit of thoughtfulness, isn't it? Do you know?
Yeah. Like, given the volume of what was consumed, maybe the same capacity wasn't there to carry stuff off the beach as there was to carry it on. Maybe they weren't as steady coming to the going off the beach as they were coming to it.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, but look, I mean, you're not really allowed to drink on the beach by taking nitrous oxide, but certainly, you know, maybe there needs to be more vigilance around that, you know, around people having these drink parties or nitrous oxide parties on the beaches, that we need to think that, you know, people who do that are more likely to leave the rubbish behind. And now, in fairness to the guys, I think it was the guys who worked that, because we often see them cleaning the bin and changing the bin or emptying the bin. But like, they just came along and they cleaned everything up, you know, they seemed resigned to it. They just got in there and they were cleaning it all up. So fair play to them. A couple of other people looked like they were maybe helping out as well. I don't know if they're volunteers. Right. They didn't have the jackets on to suggest that they worked for the council. But, you know, people were just chipping in and cleaning up. And it did get cleaned very quickly, in fairness to them. But, you know, they shouldn't have to do that. And for the people who live there as well, they shouldn't have to put up with that either.
And
you
have a fairly international cohort of people playing beach volleyball, do you?
Oh, we do. Absolutely. Yeah, actually, I was there with a Lithuanian, a Mexican and an Italian.
And what do they make of the state of the beach?
Well, the Italian girl was saying that, you know, potentially what seems to happen in Italy is that they charge people to go onto the beach. And that sort of rules out that behaviour, you know, that they, I'm not suggesting that we would do that. It would be, I think, a shame if that were to happen. But, you know, if people start abusing something that is shared by everybody, you can see how people might start to say, well, we need more security and we need to sort of clamp down on people coming in. But, you know, I think that will be a shame in a way, because our beaches are such a sort of an open and public resource for everyone. It's kind of like the tragedy of the commons or something, you know, that, like, we need to respect it to keep it that way, you know, to keep it open and accessible for everybody. But people come along and abuse it, what she said happens in Italy anyway, that they do that. But
Eric Rankin, the kind of litter you're worried about isn't limited to beaches.
No, it's all over Dublin.
And what is it?
Discarded vaping items, which my main concern is an environmental one. People know the health hazards because it's actually marked that it's highly addictive on the literature. But discarding these items on the road will lead to, without a doubt, because I've picked them up from beside the drain, the gullies on the road, and if they get into the drainage systems and the rivers, our fish will be targeted by these corroding batteries. It's a big problem. I've collected several bags and left them back to one of the distributors at this stage. Haven't had a reply, as you can imagine.
Right. And when you say, I mean, we won't name the distributor or, you know, or where you've left it back to, but the principle of it, I mean, if there are disposable vapes and you do gather them up in a bag, where are you supposed to leave them back to? The place that sold them to you?
Well, that's a very good point. I've taken them back to the distributor. First time it was just the paper boxes that they come in, like cigarette boxes, and the pieces of silver paper that holds the vaping items. I don't know where you could drop them, to be honest. I suppose in the battery banks in supermarkets, but whether they're suitable for that type of battery drop, I don't know.
Well, I suppose, given that they contain a battery, the wee drop-off points would probably be the most appropriate place.
It would be.
But as you say, if they're dropped on roads, it's not just even waiting for them to corrode. If a vehicle drives over them,
what happens. Vehicles drive over them and the batteries sort of spew out each end of the item.
And do you see many of them around, Eric? Do you see many of them around?
Yeah, I mean, I rarely go out of my grabber and get nothing. I got one this morning. I got about a half a dozen the day before yesterday. And I get a good quantity. If I go out for a two-hour walk, I'll get about half a dozen, maybe 10 items.
Right. And how often do you go out for a two-hour walk in a week?
Oh, I'm out every day nearly.
Right. So that's 14 hours times 10 is 140 of these vapes. Maybe let's throw another two and a half of them on average. That's, say, 25 of them maybe picked up in the course of a week.
Easily, yeah.
Right. Oh, sorry, 10 in the course of a walk, is it?
It could be, yeah. It could be more, depending on the length. So, yeah. But that could be, that's about right.
You're up to about 80 of them then. Sorry, I'm...
Yeah.
My mental maths. Well, I'm glad I wasn't sitting Leaving Cert Paper 1 this week. So 10 a day, 7 days a week, 70 vape, disposable vapes being brought back.
Well, I would say I have brought at least 70 items back to the distributors.
And what's the reaction when you bring them back?
Well, I was told the first time that they were trying to develop something. They are aware of this problem, I think, in the company. That there are several companies, by the way. It's not just one, but I'm sort of concentrating on one particular distribution company. They said they were thinking to develop, but you could be told anything at the reception desk.
Right. But anyway, you're sick of seeing them when you're out and about walking around.
Well,
I'm
tired of seeing them, but the main problem I see is in the future, that if they get into the rivers.
And is it, you know, do you question why do they sell disposable versions of vapes at all when there are reusable? I know you're not, you know, you have your own concerns about the health implications of vaping, but when there are replaceable cartridges that can go into a reusable dispenser, why do they sell the disposable ones at all, would you ask?
Well, you would wonder. You do see people with their standard vaping device, and I don't pick up... I may have picked up one of those, but it's too easy after 600 puffs, which is what the literature tells you you get from this, to throw it away.
Hmm. Michael, you're in Galway. You've concerns about another potentially addictive substance with people throwing away the dispensers, the much more benign coffee cups.
Yeah, absolutely. To me, it's a major, major problem. There's a Guardian article from 2020, and it says why Britain's 2.5 billion paper coffee cups are an eco-disaster. I believe most people are under the impression that after they've drank their coffee, that paper cup is actually recyclable. When I think the facts tell us that 1 in 400 cups are recyclable. 1 in 400. I mean, so we're laggards. It's as simple as that. There are just way too many people. There are way too many regular coffee drinkers that do not have their own cup. But I also think the coffee shops themselves have to do more. I was recently in probably the busiest coffee shop in the north of Ireland. I spoke to the lady, I said, listen, about how many people bring a keep cup? And she said, on a Thursday, out of 600 cups, 17 people had keep cups. Now, I would say about a third of that 600 had a sit-in cup of coffee, but even if you take 17 keep cups out of the remaining 400, it's embarrassing and it's pitiful. And I said to her, so where is your sign that says people get a cheaper cup of coffee if they bring their keep cup? And she said, oh yeah, that's a good idea. So I am putting the call out to coffee shops across the country. Have a sign in store and on your social media, and it's as simple as this. Bring a keep cup, save 20 cents, reduce waste.
Do you have
simple
a keep cup, I take
that.
It?
Pardon?
You have a keep cup, do you?
I did, yeah. I mean, I was going
where do you
ago.
Put it? Where do you put it when you're walking? Because some people, you know, they have a cup of coffee, they're not carrying a bag with them, they don't have anything else, they're just hands-free, hands in the pockets, duck into a coffee shop, have a coffee.
There are these collapsible coffee cups that you can buy. They're about 15 euros, you know, so they collapse and they fit in your pocket. But it's, to me, the coffee shops have to play their part in incentivizing people to switch from disposable coffee cups to keep cup.
And do you think coffee shops got out of the habit of it because people were iffy about keep cups during during COVID, obviously, because the potential for infection. So it was back to paper cups. Do you think a bit of progress was lost there, maybe?
I think the whole COVID thing has played a part, but still the public's take-up of coffee cups is pitiful. I see it all the time. It's embarrassing and it's depressing.
All right. And what do you say? You think there should be a 20 pence 20 pence, showing my age. 20 cent discount.
Cents, 20 cents or 30 cents. Let me point you in the direction of Bread 41 in Dublin. Bread 41 in Dublin do not give out any single-use coffee cups whatsoever. So if you want a cup of coffee in Bread 41, you bring your own cup or you pay a fiver deposit for one of their keep cups.
For anyone who doesn't know what Bread 41 is, it's a bakery and coffee.
That you can keep.
It's a bakery and coffee shop on Pier Street in Dublin.
But they're showing serious leadership on this issue.
So explain the deposit system again there. Sorry for interrupting you, Mike.
So with Bread 41, you bring your own keep cup, or if you don't have a keep cup, you give them a fiver and they will give you a cup that you can either keep or return when you're finished to get your fiver back. Now, that to me is admirable, and that's real leadership. Whereas my job takes me around the country, and I've seen it everywhere. I've seen it in Galway, I've seen it in Wicklow, I've seen it in the north of Ireland, I've seen it in Sligo. The other coffee shops have nothing in store that clearly says the person with the keep cup gets a cheaper cup of coffee. I'm going to come back to that soundbite again. Bring a keep cup, save 20 cents, reduce waste. Simple as that. That is, now look, you will never solve the problem, but you will reduce the problem from a bin full of coffee cups to a bin maybe half full of coffee cups. If you look at any bin, public bin that's close to a coffee shop, they're full of coffee cups and lids. And as I say, the public are laggards, but the coffee shops have to play their part as well.
All right. OK, thanks, Michael. We're going to take a break. We're going to actually hear from Owen Klusky from Bread 41 a bit more about that after this.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Call him on guy in here. Owen Klusky, good afternoon to you.
Hey, good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
Not at all. What's the reaction when somebody comes in and orders a coffee and they're told keep cup only, fiver deposit?
Actually, genuinely, a really good reaction. We initially trialled this over 4 years ago and we did small steps. So we went initially one day, moving to 4 days pre-pandemic, and then unfortunately we had to roll back. But as of February 1st this year, we have no to any coffee cup, any takeout coffee cup, that a compostable cup going to the bin. We've said no to. So it's
not even
really
compostable
good.
Cups, no.
No, well, you see, this is the problem, you know. When we talk about compostable, it's like we're saying, oh, it's compostable, so it's okay. But we're all aware what happens when the cup leaves the door, it goes to a bin, and I hope we're all aware that anything that goes into the bin in the public sector goes to the incinerator, no matter what it is.
Right, so notionally compostable, but only if it goes into a compostable bin. I mean, from your point of view, running a business, what does it mean to you in your bottom line not to be using disposable cups?
Well, as a business last year, when we were still using them, we averagely put about 34,000 compostable cups in the bin. So we were responsible for 34,000 cups getting incinerated this year.
Just from
so
your
far,
coffee shop alone?
Yeah.
34,000 cups. And how much would they cost you per unit?
You're looking at about 16 cents for the cup and about 9 cents for the lid. So the current situation this year, since February, we've saved the business €8,500 and not getting them, not buying the cup. So it's a massive saving for a small business, and one that we're super proud of for the initiative, to be honest with you. And we're super proud of the customers that come with their cups. I think we're aware coffee's getting a lot smaller. I think specialty coffee shops are now, a lot of coffee's doing the 6 ounce. So realistically, it's a couple of, well, in my world, when I drink it, it's two sips and it's gone. So it's just an ornamental waste for no need for it, really.
Right. And the hands in the pockets man or woman carrying no bag and just walking along the street, do they use collapsible coffee cups, or what do they use as a keep cup?
Yeah, I think it's a bit of a mix. And I think, to be honest with you, a lot of people are just taking them extra 5 minutes and sitting down and having a cup of coffee. And I think that's what we have to get back to in food in general is, you know, taking time to have your cup and your coffee and your sandwich or your stuff. Like, it came a problem in life in general. We get everything we're eating on the go. Right. And I think, like, I was recently in Japan, it was fast. People don't eat while walking. They take the minute, they take the time to feed themselves and then get on about their day. So a lot of people that would just sit in, have a cup of coffee, take 5 minutes themselves and head out. So it's been really, really good and forever thankful of.
And very, very, very briefly, how many people keep the keep cup and how many people drop it back and get their fiver back?
Well, yeah, it's it's a funny analogy. So basically any tourists, and they get it, they arrive on a Friday and we'll see them 7 to 10 days later and they come back for their cups. And that's a really great thing for us, because that means that they have taken that cup with them. They've used that cup not only in Dublin, maybe in Galway, Cork, wherever else they're visiting, and then they bring it back and they've got the €5 and
right.
It works.
It's the coffee equivalent of a Leap card. All right, Owen Klusky, thanks very much for joining us. We're back after this.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Cullum O'Mungoin here. Declan Kelly, people have been in touch because we cut you off before we could hear the end of the story. So you're in Kafue National Park in Africa. The year is 2001. The national park is the size of Leinster. You have gone out to tend to see where the elephants are, and then you are surrounded in a thicket on three sides by a herd of elephants. You make a break into the open, and the elephants come charging towards you. They're knocking down trees. You make a run for another thicket to try and get up the trees. The two security guards who are with you have AK-47 rifles. They loose off a number of shots. The elephants are undeterred. A bull elephant, we think, is standing over your colleague Rachel, who's falling. His tusks are hitting the ground. You turn around, you hear her scream. What happens next?
Well, it was an actual theme. Female, believe it or not, and she tossed the ground, and as I said, the guy in charge ran out and faced her, and then she backed off just slightly, and then she came again, and then me and my friend Simon got up and we ran out and we all stood in front of her and we all moved towards her and we started throwing stones and sticks and whatnot and just saying, get back, get back. She slowly but surely backed off. Our two guards who had, by the way, kept on going, running. They came
the
back.
The AK-47s had gone.
They had ran. And so we basically just took it upon ourselves to get up and protect her. And we faced her down, the huge elephant, and all the other elephants. Basically, she was the lead one. And so when she started to back off, the rest of them just stopped. The guards came back, started to fire their AKs, and then the elephant just turned around. At that point, we're all in shock. Our friend is on the ground.
Rachel?
She had actually, believe it or not, she'd only broke her leg.
Only broke her leg.
And only, well, you know.
It's easy for you to say, Declan.
Huge elephant comes down. Yeah, I know, right. And so she broke her leg, and so we had to basically we broke off branches from a tree, took off our T-shirts, put them in there, and then lifted her up, and we started to walk with her. But unfortunately, we didn't get very far because it was so hot. So one of the guards picked her up, and on his back, and we walked through, and he says, "Look, I can't carry this gun anymore. Do you want to take it?" I said, "Yeah, okay." And I took it. And so he says, "Look, I saw some line tracks back there, just
Declan,
in case." You
Declan,
know.
You're trying to get another program out of us.
I know. All right.
Right.
But
so you're walking along with
an
AK-47 with your eyes peeled for a line.
Yeah. And but long story short, we made it to a road, and our leader went off and got help, and we were there for about 2 hours. Me and Rachel and an AK looking around, hoping we wouldn't be attacked by whatever.
And somewhere
after 2 hours,
and you were
two hours later, we were help came, and then she was flown out by the French army a few hours past that, and she went back home, and she's still alive and happy, and her leg is fine.
And we wish her well, and to you. And somewhere in a parallel universe, a female elephant is ringing the elephant equivalent of Liveline and talking about the time she survived the human charge
exactly
that was conducted
right
by you, Simon, and sticks and stones, and the two lads with the AK-47s. All right, thanks very much, Declan Kelly. On
Thank
Sound Today,
much,
Liam
sir.
Mullen. Research was by A.B. Philbin Bowman. The series producer, Annette Egan. I'm Cullum O'Mungoin. Catherine Thomas is next. Have a great weekend. Joe's back on Monday.
0818 715 815 stays open until 3:15 p.m. or email joe@rte.ie.